they made to follow Jesus. And, you know, we see that play out in their life as individuals, as a couple in their marriage, but also as they parent Olivia too. So I was so excited to be able to be a part of that and to see just their stories continue to play out. Welcome to Cranston Christian Fellowship. My name's Steve. I get to be one of the pastors with the staff here at CCF. And I'm going to continue our series called Getting Away. And in the tagline here, it says, let go and live free. And I've always kind of struggled with that tagline a little bit with this series. But it is true, when you go on vacation, you want to just kind of let go of everything, right? You want to let go of all the things that have just maybe burdened you. You want to leave behind all of the emails and maybe the social media stuff and whatever else it is that you have been holding on to and that you just get to let go of. And you get to live free for a moment at least, right? To do the experiences and the excursions that you want to do, to eat the food that you want to eat. Like, it's up to you when you're on vacation. You get to do whatever it is that you want to do. And that's like my favorite part. Today, we're going to look at what it means to have true freedom. To have true freedom. And we're going to look at that through a story of a judge. Apparently this summer, I get like the Judges Hall of Fame. I taught earlier this summer on Gideon, and today I get a fan favorite, Samson. So we'll be in Judges chapters 13 through 16. We'll touch on parts of each of those chapters. But I want to remind you real quick about the ways that judges bring freedom. Oh, there we go. The ways that judges bring freedom is first between people and God. And when I say people and God, I mean like a nation of people and God. So like if there is sin that keeps people away from being able to worship God freely, a judge would come in and break down that barrier like Gideon did, where he tore down the altars of Baal so that the people could worship God freely. The story today is more about a judge that brings freedom to a nation that was experiencing oppression from another nation. In this case, Israel and the Philistines. So that's one of Samson's primary roles. And then thirdly, is a way a judge brings freedom is between people, like interpersonal relationships. If there's conflict between two people or one or more people, that judge would bring about reconciliation and freedom in that relationship so that they can experience right relationship together. Those are the three ways that judges bring about freedom. But what happens if the judge himself is not experiencing personal freedom? Like, or he's experiencing freedom, but it's all for himself. Like, that is not a good thing. And that's exactly what Samson was about. And the thing that we want to focus on today is that freedom is found when God is first. I want you to grab hold of that idea that freedom is found when God is first. That progression of the fact that a judge was supposed to bring first freedom to God's people and break down any kind of wall that exists between people and himself. Like, that is like the primary heart focus that a judge should focus on. And then secondly, between nations, and then between interpersonal relationships. But what happens when a judge is all about serving himself? That is exactly what Samson was about. And Samson was a person that could really get whatever he wanted, whenever he wanted it. And he was a guy that he just had the power. I mean, physically the power, and he could just dictate anything that he wanted. And that's exemplified in Judges chapter 14, verse 3. He sees a woman that he wants, and he says, get her for me. This is what he says to his father. And his father and mother are not very happy with it. They say, is there not a woman among the daughters of your relatives or among all our people that you must go to take a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines? Basically, they're saying to Samson, listen, out of all the people that you could choose for yourself, why not follow and try and line yourself up with a God-fearing woman? Like, why is that not your focus, Samson? And Samson turns to his dad and says, get her for me, for she is right in my eyes. Now, if I said that to my dad, I think he'd slap me silly. But that's what he says to his dad, because he feels the freedom to ask for whatever he wants, because it's right in his eyes, which, by the way, is like the definition of sin. To do something that's right in your own eyes and disregard what it is that God wants for your life. That is like the definition of sinful behavior. Now, the author of Judges gives this brief aside, and he says, no, there's a greater purpose for what's happening here. He says, his father and mother did not know that it was from the Lord, for he was seeking an opportunity against the Philistines. At that time, the Philistines ruled over Israel. So you remember the three purposes of a judge, the three ways that judges brought about freedom. What the author is letting you in on is that even though Samson is pursuing his own deal, that God is working a much bigger story here. And that story is to bring about the redemption of his people from under the hand of the Philistines. And so just bear that in mind, that God is using Samson, would love for Samson to be aligned with his heart. But even if he doesn't go the way that God would desire him to go, God's going to use his choices ultimately for his glory and his purpose. Just keep that as a background thought. So, the thing that we see with Samson, that while freedom is found when God is first, that when freedom that is self-serving, when we pursue that type of freedom, it often results in pain and entanglement. That we have a lot of choices that we can make day in and day out that are self-serving, that you're free to make. Like, there are multiple decisions that you can make day in and day out. There are laws in the land that allow you to do things that, while you can do them, aren't necessarily beneficial. You can drink and smoke at certain ages. You can have a credit card and buy things till your heart's content, although it usually isn't. And at the end of it all, there's usually pain and entanglement if you take those freedoms and take them to their natural end. And that's exactly what Samson was going to experience. And despite all of that, despite the fact that Samson pursued those things, God's Spirit still shows up in Samson's life throughout his rule and his judgment over Israel. It's amazing to me. And you may hear, I'm going to go through the ways real quick of how God's Spirit shows up. And at the end of it, you may say, so what are you saying here? Are you saying that it's okay for me to do whatever it is that I want to do? Well, let's see. So here's some examples of God's pursuing spirit in Samson's life. The first is in Judges 14:6. Remember, he says to his parents, get this woman for me. So they go and they look and they maybe have some conversations with this bride-to-be of Samson, this lucky girl. And on the way, a lion attacks them. And some people might say, well, yeah, of course, like God's sending his judgment on Samson for pursuing this ungodly family in this ungodly direction. No, that's not what happens here. In fact, in Judges chapter 14, verse 6, it says, then the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon Samson, and although he had nothing in his hand, he tore the lion as one tears a young goat into pieces. Now, that's, first of all, incredible that he was able to take a lion and rip it into pieces like someone would rip a tiny little baby goat, which is just weird because I've never seen anyone tear a goat to pieces with their bare hands. But that's what the author of Judges says he was able to do. It goes on. They visit this family. They go back to their home town, and then they return for the wedding feast. And on the way, Samson comes across the lion that he's torn into pieces, and this dead carcass of a lion is on the side of a road, and inside of it is a hive of bees that's full of honey. And he goes to his wedding feast, and maybe after one too many drinks, he challenges all of the companions that were with him to a riddle. And the riddle goes something like this. Out of the eater came something to eat, and out of strong came something sweet. He gives the men 3 days to figure out what this riddle means. And I just want you to capture the vanity of Samson. First of all, he's going after a woman that is just right in his eyes, not what's right with God. And then he kills this lion and sees an opportunity to pursue again something for himself. He wants all of the best garments of the land. And so he challenges the 30 men to this riddle and says, if you lose, I get all of your best wardrobes. So he wants to look good. He wants to have the nice looking lady. I mean, he wants it all. And this is his view of the dream. He is living free. Well, this is a Philistine woman. Not a God-fearing woman. She has no allegiance to Samson. And all of her people turn to her and say, you've got to figure out what the answer to this riddle is. And she figures it out because she pesters Samson. And then finally, he gives up the answer. She gives it up to the men and they give the answer. And then in verse 19, he is enraged. He is so angry because he knows how they got the answer. And I want you to catch the word here. It says, and the spirit of the Lord rushed upon Samson, and he went down to Ashkelon and struck down 30 men of the town and took their spoil and gave the garments to those who had told the riddle. Wouldn't you love to be a person who won that riddle? You know, the blood-soaked garments of people who had just been slaughtered by Samson. Like, that's your prize. Like, that's what's happening here. Then he goes home in a fit of rage and leaves his bride-to-be to be married off to his best man. Okay? He comes back and sees that his wife had been married off to his best man, and so he ties torches to 300 foxes and sends them out into the vineyards and to the fields to burn all of their crops. Then he goes and hides. Right, that's what I would do. The people of the Philistines go to the land of Judah, and they say, bring us Samson, or we are going to bring destruction upon you. And so all 3,000 men of Israel go to where Samson is. Notice, he wasn't in the middle of the city being protected by his people. They had to go find him. And they say, we need to turn you over to the Philistines. So he says, tie me up in new ropes and bring me to them. And in chapter 15, verse 14, it says that when he came to Lehi, he's tied up in ropes. The Philistines came shouting to meet him. And then the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him, and the ropes that were on his arms became as flax that has caught fire, and his bonds melted off his hands. And this is where, like, the story that the kids go, man, this is so cool. Like, movies could be written about it. He says, and he found a fresh jawbone of a donkey and put out his hand and took it. And with it, he struck down 1,000 men. Like, this is incredible, right? And the thing that you see, the common theme that you see with Samson is that there's victory with what? The Spirit of the Lord. The Spirit of the Lord, as long as he has the Spirit of the Lord with him, he can have victory. And you might go, well, does that mean that I can have victory in life and I can do whatever it is that I want to do if I just dedicate myself to God, but then I can do anything? Like, I can accomplish anything. I can jump over people, step on them to get where I want to go in my job. I can do anything that I want to do as long as I say I'm a Christ follower. Is that what we're saying here? I want to look at what the results are a little closer of Samson's freewheeling life. He's left without a wife. Remember? He had to give, or his wife was given to his best man, and then later in the story, I didn't even say this, her and her family were actually killed because of what Samson had done. And then he's left without a people in chapter 15, verse 8. And in verse 18, you see him being thirsty for more. It says that they literally had to find him in a cleft of a rock, in a cave. He's without a people. He's without a wife. He's in no man's land. He is not living the high life here. He's a man with no one. And in verse 18, it says, I read this and I love the imagery. It says, but it's not just imagery, it's reality for him. It says, he was very thirsty. And he called upon the Lord and said, you have granted this great salvation by the hand of your servant. And shall I now die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised? Isn't that how we feel often when we pursue our life just for us? Remember what I said, when we pursue freedom, a self-serving life of freedom, often ends in pain and entanglement. And that's exactly what Samson was experiencing himself. He's left thirsty, wanting more. And my question for you is what are you thirsting after? What are the things that you are pursuing hard after in life without God as the center of it at all? Because for Samson, he's not looking at God first and pursuing that. He's pursuing after everything else, vanity. And what he's left with in verse 18 is he's left thirsty. Has God been able to accomplish his purpose to bring judgment on the people of the Philistines? Absolutely. Is Samson just living the high life because he's at the center of that? Nope. Because he's not doing it the way that would be honoring to God. See, a life not honoring to God leads to pain and entanglement. That could be physical, but it also could be spiritual entanglement. I want to keep reading in verse 19 of chapter 15. It says, and God, he hears the voice of Samson. And this shows something about the relationship between God and Samson. We're going to look at that a little more in a second. But it says, and God split open the hollow place that is at Lehi, and water came out from it. And when he drank, his spirit returned, and he revived. And then in verse 20 it says, and he judged Israel in the days of the Philistines for 20 years. Now I've told you everything that's recorded about Samson up to this point in Judges. And usually at this point where it says, and he judged Israel in the days of the Philistines for 20 years, usually that is like the breaking point of the story and it moves on to a different judge. But if you know the story of Samson, you know that that is not the end of the story with Samson. You know that there's something much worse that happens to Samson than just him ending up thirsty and alone. But it says in chapter 15, verse 20, that he judged in the land of Israel over the Philistines for 20 years. So all these events are recorded over a 20-year period of time. I want to go backwards. What made the relationship between God and Samson so unique? Why was it that God was using him for this special purpose? Well, there's one big thing. Before he was even born, his parents were not able to have children, and an angel of the Lord approaches them and says, "You will have a child." And in verse 4, the angel of the Lord says to the mother and the father, therefore be careful and drink no wine or strong drink and eat nothing unclean. For behold, you shall conceive and bear a son, and no razor shall come upon his head, for the child shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb, and he shall begin to save Israel from the hand of the Philistines. So there is something special, there is something unique, something intimate about Samson and the relationship that he has with God. And that is that this angel of the Lord is saying he is going to take a vow. He will become a Nazarite to God. And here's what that means. The Nazarite vow, at least in this passage, identifies three things that made the relationship with God unique. Here they are boiled down. The Nazarite vow was that he was not to have any beer, alcoholic drink. He was not to touch any unclean bodies. And he was not, what's the third one? No Bic, no razor. All right, that was it. So no beer, no bodies, no Bic. Easy to remember, okay? Easy to remember. But just in the first part of the story, whether it was the wedding feast or his journey on the way to the wedding feast or his battles, they all included him breaking at least one of the first two parts of the vow. Yet God remained faithful to him. And you know, I think that's the story for us. Even when we turn our back on God, do you know what? He pursues us. I was listening to the songs that we were singing, and I was just thinking, wow, isn't it true that even when we put him away in the grave and left him for dead, and we turned our back in scorn on him, he didn't just stay there. He rose from the grave and pursued us from the dead so that we could have life eternally with him, a life free of sin and entanglement. Samson was living a life of bondage to himself. And he was just turning his back on this vow again and again. But he hadn't completely abandoned the vow, at least that we know of. It seems that he has kept this last part. He loved his long flowing locks. That was the one thing he would not part with. Until he meets Delilah. In Judges chapter 16, we see the free fall of Samson complete. And it started with a simple step. And that's often what happens with sin, is that we don't just jump in to sin wholeheartedly. We dip our toes in the water. And the first step of Samson's free fall started out like this. He sees Delilah. He loves her with all of who he is. And it's, again, a Philistine woman. And the lords and the rulers of the Philistines approach her and say, "We will pay you money if you will find out the key to Samson's strength." And so she sets out on a quest to figure out what it is that is giving Samson this power, this ability to judge over the Philistines in the way that he has. And the first step that he gives in this complete downfall is he says to her, "If you would tie me in 7 fresh bowstrings, all of my strength will leave me." Now you might look at this and go, why did he choose that? And why is this significant? Well, what we're going to see later is, the first of all, that the number 7 refers to the number of locks of hair that he has. The fresh bowstrings are another example of him turning his back on the Nazarite vow. Because the bowstrings were made usually, and notice it says fresh bowstrings, they're made out of animal tendons or intestines. What was he not supposed to touch? Unclean, dead bodies. And he says, "Tie me in these things." Now, what gives him the confidence that he will get, how is this just dipping his toes in the water? Because he's already gone there. He's already dipped his toe in that water. He's already touched unclean things. And he knows that he's okay. And don't we do that too? I can do this. I can go into a little bit of debt here. I can have this one drink here. I can do this. I can do this. Cut this one little corner. It won't hurt anybody. It won't do anything. I'm free to make that kind of a choice. And he was. He was free to make that choice. And there was no immediate consequence for that. When she warned him that Philistines are upon him, he was able to bust through the bowstrings. And then the second step, she says, "You lied to me. How can I remove all your strength?" He says, "Tie me up in new ropes." We know that's not going to work because he's already busted through new ropes that the Israelites tied around him. But again, what are these new ropes pointing to? The braids of the ropes probably resembled the braids of his hair. He's getting closer and closer to pointing out blatantly where it is that his power comes from. In step 3, now we're getting into real dangerous territory. It's gone from alluding to something that looked like his hair and making a reference obscurely about his hair, the 7, the new ropes, to now saying, "Hey, take my hair and weave it into your loom, into your web, it says. Now, what this tells us is that this is for sure a Philistine woman, and it also points back to why the earlier thing about his riddle was true, was because most Philistine women had looms in their household. It was their main source of income. And so when he says, weave my seven locks into your loom, she does that. And at the end of it, usually you'd clamp it down and put like a bolt through it to lock it in place. So when she says the Philistines are upon you, and he wakes up from his sleep and he lifts his head up, it actually busts the loom into pieces. And so couldn't you picture Samson with pieces of loom all stuck in his hair, waking up kind of groggy and then going, all right, I'll take on these Philistines. Like, that's the picture. But there's something even more significant here in that not only is he pointed out that, hey, maybe my hair has a bigger thing to do with my strength, but he's also just now destroyed her maybe one way of income. And now she's even more into this whole plot to take down Samson. Now she needs the money from Samson. The last step is the big reveal. And here's what he says. And the author captures something. Samson doesn't just tell her where all of his strength comes from. There's a phrase that's repeated three times in the course of two verses that I think pull it out of where his downfall comes into. It says in Judges chapter 16, verse 17, it says, he told her all his heart and said to her, a razor has never come upon my head, for I have been a Nazarite to God. Not a good one, but he's been one. From my mother's womb. If my head is shaved, then my strength will leave me, and I shall become weak and be like any other man. When Delilah saw that he had told her all his heart, she sent and called the lords of the Philistines, saying, come up again, for he has told me all his heart. Then the lords of the Philistines came up to her and brought the money in their hands. And when she called out and said, the Philistines are upon you, he went out not knowing that his head had been shaved, and he was humiliated. You see, he wasn't just dipping his toes in the water anymore. He was over his head, and he didn't even know it. And sometimes when we live a life of freedom that is self-serving, we don't even know where we are, the depths of our sin, until it's too late. And that's why I think this story is much more than just about Samson being able to deliver a nation from the hand of the Philistines. I think that this is a warning to all of God's people that, hey, don't play with sin. You have the freedom to make some choices, but not all of those freedoms are beneficial when you fail to have God first in your life. He had given all of his heart to another. No longer was God number one in his life. And do you remember what we said at the very beginning? We said freedom is found when God is first. You know, when we say God is first, we say that we trust Jesus to be the way, the truth, and the life. And do you know what Jesus promised to give us when we make him number one? His Spirit. And 2 Corinthians 3:17 says, now the Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is what? Freedom. Not in what we pursue ourselves, but in when we make God first. There's some next steps that I encourage you to take with me today. And that is that there on your connection card, there are two places for you to check off ways that we can pray for you. Would you check off the first one, if this applies to you, to pray for me as I try to start each day by seeking after God first. That might be just spending some time in His Word, praying, journaling, whatever it is. I'd encourage you to take that step. The second step is another way that we can pray for you. I know that it may sound like you, what I'm saying is you have to try and figure out what it is that is taking your heart, that that what it is that you're thirsting after. But I'm not saying that. I'm saying seek after God first. And then allow Him to examine your heart. Allow Him to take out all the things that have occupied your heart for so long. Let Him filter those things out. And the second step says, pray for me as I try to identify and remove things in my life that I thirst after more than God. Allow God to do that work with you and in you. You can text the word pray to 401-496-9710 if you don't have a connection card right with you. We'd love for you to do that. And then the last next step is that will you commit with me to follow after God in such a way that draws others closer to the freedom found only in Him. Hey, let me pray for you. God, thank you for your word. Thank you for the example of Samson, even though it was a poor example in so many ways. God, there's examples of how you stood by him. God, help us not to get to a point where we find ourselves so far over our heads in sin that we feel like we can't have a relationship with you. God, what's so cool about this story is that even in all of that, when Samson was at the height of his humiliation, you returned to him and you gave him victory. God, that is incredible. And regardless of where we are, regardless of where we stand, regardless of what road we've gone down on our own path, God, you are gracious and you give us life. And we thank you for that freedom that we experience that's only found in you. Amen.